are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Brian Peacock here, your host for this Rapid React episode, which we do on Mondays following Sunday football games. The 49ers shocked everybody, beat the Denver Broncos 20-14. Really, it was the San Francisco George Kittles that beat the Denver Broncos 20-14. George Kittle went off. A lot more about him in a minute. We'll get to the takeaways from the game and game notes and all that, and then drop off some game balls to those deserving folks that had a big part in winning this football game for the 49ers. We'll talk draft position and how that's changed now that the 49ers won another game. A lot of people thought that the 49ers weren't going to have any more W's in this schedule, and including myself. I thought the W's were going to be hard to come by for the rest of the season, but looked like a different 49ers team, I think, this week. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review the show. We're on iTunes. We're on Spotify. We are everywhere. You can find me on Twitter at BD Peacock. That is a great place to get involved in any mailbag segments, and we're going to have one tomorrow with Mr. Nick Winkler, our weekly wink on Tuesday's show, a.k.a. Kicked in the Nick, that title submitted by listeners. I think the Broncos got kicked in the Nick today. You can also email the program LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. So I mentioned how the 49ers looked like a different team this week, and the post-game locker room speech by both Kyle Shanahan and Jed York had a pretty serious tone, and it was one of the best speeches, easily the best speech I've heard Jed York give, and I think it really hit home for a lot of players and a lot of fans, talking about his brother Tony York and how this game was for Tony. They won it for Tony. For those of you who hadn't heard, Jed's brother and the son of John York and Denise DeBartolo York passed away at the young age of 35, and no reasons, no cause for death have been released there, but I think the 49ers family's hearts were a little bit heavy in this game, and the 49ers came out and won one for Tony York. And so the whole speech from Kyle Shanahan and Jed York, it's definitely worth a listen if you haven't heard it. A lot of people that are even that had been Jed York haters on Twitter were like, nah, man, he's all right. He's all right. And one guy tweeted at me and was like, I was so pissed the 49ers won that game and ruined their draft position until I heard that, and I'm not mad about it anymore. But I think what I liked about it is there was a realness about Jed York that you don't always get, and especially the part where Jed said, when the 49ers win another Super Bowl, there's going to be a ring for Tony, and he's going to leave a ring for him. And I thought that was pretty cool, and he had a good message about the 49ers becoming great that I think fans will want to hear. Onto the game where, man, George Kittle just took this thing over early. But before he took the game over, some notes at the very start of the game. Well, first of all, Matt Breida inactive due to his ankle injuries he's been dealing with all year. Jeff Wilson Jr. gets the start at running back. Played pretty well. He ran hard, man, like he does. I mean, that's what he does. And he was getting some chunk yardage early. It started to get very difficult, and the Broncos did clamp down, and he was trying to turn out tough yardage and really completely carried the load. He ended up carrying the ball 23 times for 90 yards, just under 4 yards, 3.9 yard average there. But I liked what I saw from Jeff Wilson once again, and the fact that he could take the pounding, and he was, there were some hard yards in there for Jeff Wilson for sure. And he did enough to keep the Broncos off the field, which I think was important when they started getting momentum late in the game. And the 49ers offense did just enough, and the defense showed up big. So a lot of things to get to with this game for the 49ers. Pettis and Bourne. Dante Pettis and Kendrick Bourne, like last week, were starting at wide receiver for the 49ers, even with Marquise Goodwin back in the fold. Now, Marquise did get on the field on the opening drive and was on the field a lot, so there was a bit of a rotation going on there. Pettis was on the field most of the time, and then I think Marquise was on the field a lot. Bourne was there, so there was definitely a bit of a rotation, and it'll be interesting to hear Kyle Shanahan talk about how he decided that and what the thought process was and how he utilized those guys. But, yeah, another nice game for Dante Pettis. I think he started a little bit slower in this game. And, of course, George Kittle just took the game over. And they got George Kittle going early. He got a couple of catches on the first drive, one for 31 yards, multiple huge plays for George Kittle in this game. But the opening drive would end up stalling in the red zone. And you're thinking, oh, here's one of those games again. 49ers, you know, put up some yards but can't get points. But, man, the 49ers defense really held their end. Robbie Gould, field goal on the opening drive. So the 49ers took a lead. And then a quick three and out for the 49ers defense. So just a great start for San Francisco all around. I love seeing one play from Akella Witherspoon. Textbook coverage on Cortland Sutton on the first drive. Tried to go deep to Sutton on a fade route. And, well, Witherspoon mistimes his jump at the catch point. I mean, he still caused the incompletion there, but I loved how he stayed square at the line of scrimmage, didn't panic, confident, just turning and running with Sutton, sort of riding him to the sideline, got his head around early, and he might have had an opportunity to pick that ball off if he times his jump better, but he kind of got up in the air really early and didn't. I don't know if he even got a piece of it, but he did enough to cause the incompletion there to Cortland Sutton. As I mentioned already, but Jeff Wilson, it's in my notes here again. Love the vision, love the moving the chains, the getting downhill from Jeffrey Wilson, all of those cliches for running backs. I mean, he's that guy. He's a no BS runner, and it was working. He was, 5.5 yards per clip earlier in the game on the first few drives, and then things started to get a little bit tighter for him. But he was still running hard and still getting yards, and the 49ers did a great job of continuing to manufacture long drives. And on the other side of the ball, more three and outs than I can remember for the 49ers defense in this one. So, I mean, for a while, I don't know, I have the numbers in front of me, but I feel like there was more three and outs in this game than maybe any game all year for the Niners. Maybe aside from that Raiders game, because that was just a complete blowout. One clip that I love seeing in this game, it was in the first quarter, late in the first quarter. Robert Saleh just, it might have been earlier in the first quarter, but Robert Saleh was just completely pumped on the sideline. The camera kept going to him on this one drive. Following a stop by the 49ers defense, he was going nuts. And Saleh is usually pretty calm, and a lot of times the drives don't end as well. So you see him with his hands on his knees, and they go back to him, and his hands just still on his knees, and he's kind of nervous and just sitting there looking at the field. But this time he was pumped. He was, he was excited. Opened up the game with two straight three and outs. It was a real tone-setting start to the game for the 49ers. Then the big plays of Kittle, and it was just like some really quick knockout punches in a boxing match. And the Broncos were stunned by it, I think. And again, Witherspoon made the third down play in man coverage following Tim Patrick across the field and batting the ball away. So a great start in this game and a pretty good finish for Akella Witherspoon in this football game. So the 49ers started great, but how would they finish? More game notes. We're going to give out some game balls. Talk a little draft position after this. This Sunday, the Patriots will have a huge showdown with Pittsburgh. This single game will go a long way to clearing up the playoff picture, and it could go a long way for you to win huge cash prizes. Single game fantasy football is the newest way to play at DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football. If you've been thinking about trying DraftKings, now's the time. DraftKings has taken fantasy football from just 1 week to just one game, making it easier to draft your lineup. All you have to do is draft six players from the Pats-Steelers game, one captain, and five other players. Your captain will earn 1.5 times the points, so go for value with Steven Guskowski or star power with Tom Brady. It's that simple. Six players from one game. Just stay under the salary cap and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Go to DraftKings.com or download the app now. Use code LOCKEDON to enter a single game fantasy football contest for free this week with your first deposit and compete for your share of over $1 million in total prizes. That's code LOCKEDON only at DraftKings, the game inside the game. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. One thing that was difficult for me to see, being that he's my large adult son, is Richie James muffing another punt. And that might be the end of his days returning punts because after he did that, Trent Taylor was in on the next one. Even if it's the end of Richie James's punt returning career, that's okay because I don't think that's what is his strength. He's okay at it and he's athletic. And you would think on paper that Richie James would be this great returner. But I don't know if that's his game. I actually like Richie James as a receiver more than a returner. And I liked him that way in college. And he makes a lot of plays as a receiver, more so than as a returner, even though he's good with the ball in his hands. But I'm excited for year two of Richie James and see how, you know, he might be hitting a little bit of a rookie wall right now. But I'm looking for big things still from Richie James down the road. And he may never be a starting caliber wide receiver, but I like him in the slot. I think he can move around. I think he can do a lot of things. And I'm not afraid to put him back there and return kicks either. But there's a guy that the 49ers have on their roster, Dante Pettis, who they drafted in the second round, that's still being kept away from the return game, which is kind of weird. I don't know if it's just because Kyle Shanahan's trying not to throw too much on his plate or trying to keep him healthy, and he's basically their starting wide receiver pretty much going forward now, it looks like. So maybe he just doesn't want to. But like when you have a player who's such a great return man in college and such a record setter at that position and don't really use him at all, seems kind of weird. I mean, he's got the best college resume and should probably be the guy handling those kicks, but he's not. And Trent Taylor ended up taking over with punts. And Richie James did get some kickoffs after that, but not punt returns. So then it goes back to the George Kittle show. 52-yard reception at the end of the first quarter, and that was a record breaker for George Kittle. The first 1,000-yard, well, he wasn't quite at 1,000 yards, but he broke the all-time record for yards in a season, 2009 Vernon Davis record for 900-something yards, but Kittle blew past that in this game and ended up going over 1,000 yards in the second quarter on his 85-yard catch and run from Nick Mullins. Kittle was just straight up, I'm trying to think of a performance. There was a game, remember when Alden Smith a few years ago, man, it's been a while now, but there was that game he had like four, five sacks or something like that. And he was just putting an offensive tackle straight on his back, bull rushing him, going around him. He was completely dominating. And I kind of got that feeling from George Kittle in this game because Denver couldn't do anything about George Kittle earlier in the game. They couldn't cover him. They couldn't cover him with safeties. They couldn't cover him with linebackers. They had Bradley Chubb on him that was just like holding him. There was like two or three holding penalties because defenders were just grabbing him because they didn't know what to do against him. But, yeah, that 85-yard catch and run from George Kittle put him over 1,000 yards, gave the 49ers a commanding 13-0 lead in that game, and George Kittle would go over 200 yards in the first half, 210 to be exact. What's crazy is he wouldn't get another catch or another yard the rest of the game. Seven catches for 210 yards for George Kittle. Found out later that that was 4 yards shy of the NFL record. Shannon Sharpe's record for receiving yards for a tight end in a game was 214, and George Kittle could not get 5 more yards in the second half. There's one play in particular in the second half, when I think back about it, there was the offsides play with George Kittle, and he fired off the line and gave the guy who was in coverage right in front of him, gave him this move, and it's like, you know the ball was going his way on that one, so he might have shot himself in the foot from getting that record because he was too antsy and ended up jumping offsides on that play. But apparently Kyle Shanahan after the game said they tried to get it to him multiple times in the second half, not so much just to purely break the record, although they wanted him to, and the game script being a tight game didn't really allow them to sort of play around and really force the ball in there, although he's probably the number one, I mean, he better be the number one option on a lot of pass plays for the 49ers, but then they were not able to get him another reception and get those last 5 yards, which is slightly disappointing, but I mean, there's no disappointment in George Kittle's game right now. He's such a great blocker on top of all of this, but a record-setting performance for George Kittle and an all-timer for the 49ers at tight end, and might already be becoming, not just because of these yards, but he's already in that conversation as one of the best tight ends in 49ers history, right? Nobody's ever had 1,000 yards receiving for the 49ers at tight end. Not Brent Jones, not Russ Francis, not Vernon Davis. And so George Kittle already belongs in that conversation with Brent Jones and Vernon Davis, or the tight ends in my lifetime, where it's like, these are the guys. Brent Jones, obviously, part of all those Super Bowl teams, will always have a soft place in my heart. But George Kittle, fantastic football player for the San Francisco 49ers, a stud. He's going to be a problem for the league for a while. But the 49ers did find the end zone one more time just before halftime. Dante Pettis loses fellow rookie Isaiah Yiddum with his patented release off the line. Just that, oh my God, I did a whole podcast on it last week on Friday. Dante Pettis' release is crazy. That three-step, like, with a little hesitation, And it's like a point guard. You know those videos that go viral of point guards crossing over a dude and they just hit the deck and they fall down. They get crossed so hard. That's basically what Dante Pettis does to defensive backs and to corners. He's just got this quick little 1-2-3, boom, and he's gone. And Yidem was – it's crazy because this is a goal line play. This is, you know, a red zone fade route that Nick Mullins could throw like it was a slant route because there was that much separation. This wasn't a 50-50 fade ball. There was so much separation, he just like, oh, he's wide open. I'll just throw it to him, which you don't see very often on fade routes. And Pettis did run a slant before that, so maybe Yidem was looking for that. But, man, he lost him very quickly. And that's becoming Dante Pettis' calling card, and his signature is that release off the line. And on routes like that, like slants and that little outbreaking fade, it's very hard for defensive backs to cover. That's why I said last week that I thought Pettis should probably see some time in the slot. And he does line up in the slot a lot. I mean, Shanahan likes to move his guys around. But, yeah, that's exciting from Dante Pettis. And he started off slow. He dropped the ball. There's a play I thought he could have blocked and maybe sprung Kittle earlier on that 52-yarder for the touchdown. But he did block for him on that 85-yarder. He was out there. He was the last man that blocked that last DB, and George Kittle finished it off. But fantastic for the two young receivers, Dante Pettis and George Kittle, getting involved. And big props to Nick Mullins for finding them multiple times. Now, I don't know what happened in the Broncos locker room at halftime. I don't know how many tables were flipped over by angry coaches, but their defense looked completely different in the second half. So I was trying to time, this is my life, I have my son, my wife is around, she's kind of not paying attention to the game, I'm watching the game, I have my son, life was a lot easier, I like life better now, let's be honest, it's great being a dad, but it was a lot easier to do things like go get pizza at halftime of a football game, right? So I'm trying to go get our lunch and go pick it up during halftime, and I have it planned out and made the call, got some food ready. It's just really hard to get it together. So come back, I miss a little bit of the third quarter, and the third quarter starts. I still haven't been able to get out of the house and get the food. I leave real quick, come back. It was 20-0 when I leave, just started the third quarter. I come back, Broncos have scored. It's now 20-7, and they have the ball again. And I was like, okay, yep, here it is, second half. It's going to be one of those games, right? And I was just waiting for him to go, you know, boom, boom, and have a 21-20 lead or something like that. But it was not to happen. Anyway, the play I did miss was a Philip Lindsay 3-yard touchdown run. But one thing that the Broncos were able to start doing was starting to drive down the field. But one thing, and credit to Robert Saleh and that defense, is the 49ers defense was bend don't break there. They were still playing fast. They were flying around, playing loose in this game, which I loved. And they didn't make any huge plays, but they didn't give up any huge plays. It wasn't that just complete breakdown in the red zone where the Broncos just, you know, rolled into the end zone. They didn't have that. And so I was fully expecting it, and it did not come at this point. I think two of the biggest things that happened for the 49ers that was like, this is really going to happen, was those fourth down stops. Two huge fourth down stops. And I think the Broncos went for it on fourth down more times than, I mean, I just said earlier about how the 49ers defense had more three and outs than I can remember. They had more four and outs than I can remember. They had a couple of four and outs. They ended up being 5 of 7 on fourth downs. And they got their second touchdown on a fourth down after converting other fourth downs on this drive. Deshaun Hamilton touchdown capped off a long drive with that fourth down conversion. There was 3:53 left to play. And now the Broncos are down only 6 points, and the 49ers hadn't scored in the second half. So there was still that momentum, and there was still that feeling. It was like, oh man, 3:53 is plenty of time for the Broncos to make this happen. So either the 49ers had to finish it out on offense, or the Robert Saleh's defense is going to have to come up with another stop. And it was going to be difficult, I think, but big third down conversions by Nick Mullins and the 49ers offense on that final drive. 31-yarder to Dante Pettis. That one really sealed it as Kyle Shanahan tried to call a timeout before the play, but didn't get it. Then Trent Taylor channeling his 2017 self as he would consistently move the chains with Jimmy Garoppolo last year. We're seeing a little bit more of that old Trent Taylor now. He definitely looks a lot more healthy than he did at the beginning of the year. And then that sets up the 2-minute warning and victory formation, which the 49ers screwed up and left the Broncos with 5 seconds on the clock. But kneeling a little too early on one of those plays, but there would be no miracle for Denver as there was in Miami this week, and the 49ers probably snuff out any playoff chances for the Broncos. I've got to give out some game balls, and we got to talk draft status and tiebreakers after this. 2014, the 49ers pick up their third win of the season. What does that do to their draft status? Well, more on that in a second. First thing I want to do is give out some game balls, and really just one game ball here. This will be remembered as the George Kittle game. One really cool stat that I saw after the game. We all know about the 210 yards, but this is from Scott Barrett on Twitter. He dropped a list of the top 15 tight ends in the PFF era, Pro Football Focus, from 2007 to 2018. Minimum 300 routes run, the number one season yards per route run in that 11-year period is George Kittle's 2018 season at 2.81 yards per route run. Number two on the list is 2009 Antonio Gates. Number three on the list is 2018 Travis Kelce. So Travis Kelce having a hell of a year for himself right now. But above all these, listen to all these seasons. Jordan Reed's 2014 and 2015. I think we know who his offensive coordinator was in Washington for a time. Rob Gronkowski's 2012 and 2017 seasons. Jimmy Graham, Jason Witten, Gronk again. Antonio Gates again. Rob Gronkowski two more times. Delanie Walker two times. Those are the top 15 yards per route run seasons since 2007. Number one above all those right now is George Kittle's 2018 season, 1,103 yards, 2.81 yards per route run. Kittle gets his own lone game ball in this one, so he needs to enjoy this one all for himself. Honorable mentions, Nick Mullins. This from Josh Dubow of the Associated Press. Most yards passing per game since Nick Mullins became the starter for the 49ers in week 9. Passing yards per game. Number 1, Pat Mahomes, 354.8. Ben Roethlisberger, 2. Andrew Luck, 3. Jared Goff, 4. Tom Brady, 5, with a 300 even yards passing per game. Number 6 on that list, Nick Mullins, 295.8 since he became the starter for the 49ers in week 9. Now some garbage time with the Seahawks game, and he had a couple of rough ones and a couple of good ones, played a really bad Raiders team that also won this week. So Nick Mullins is doing all right for himself, and I think has Kyle Shanahan earlier this week said he's dead even with C.J. Beathard for that competition that's going to go into next offseason for the backup quarterback job to Jimmy Garoppolo. There's no competition as far as I'm concerned. Everything I've seen from C.J. Beathard, everything I've seen from Nick Mullins head and shoulders has played better than C.J. Beathard if it's a true competition. Honorable mention to Robert Saleh, and I was thinking about who to give it to on defense. And I think if I didn't want to give George Kittle his own game ball in this game because he was that awesome, I might just give a full game ball to Robert Saleh. He's taken a lot of grief from fans and media alike this season, but his unit played good in this game. I mean, they played good. Tons of three and outs I talked about. No big lapses, none of those miscommunications where they're pointing at each other. They played fast. They played confident. I liked what I saw out of Robert Saleh's unit in week 14 against the Broncos. And another honorable mention, how about Mike McGlinchey? He didn't pitch a shutout, but a fantastic job, I think, for the rookie versus Von Miller. One sack, three quarterback hits for Von Miller. That sack wasn't even really Miller beating McGlinchey one-on-one. It was a game run between Miller and Derek Wolfe. Wolfe freed up Miller to get to the quarterback on that one, so that wasn't like just a one-on-one beat either. So really good job by Mike McGlinchey, which was going to be his toughest matchup to date going against Von Miller, and I think he passed that test with flying colors. How about this for an honorable mention? The Oakland Coliseum turf. Chris Boswell, the Pittsburgh Steelers kicker, slipped attempting a game-tying field goal as time expired. So now both the 49ers and the Raiders won, and now three teams are tied with a 3-10 record, the Cardinals, the Raiders, and the 49ers. So we got to get into some what-ifs when it comes to the draft and draft tiebreakers, right? To answer the question on everybody's mind, okay, who would have the first pick if the season ended today? Well, it would be the 49ers. Maybe. So let's go through this. Draft tiebreakers. Number one, strength of schedule. And by the way, head-to-head is not a tiebreaker. So the fact that the Cardinals beat the 49ers twice factors into some things, but it doesn't factor into head-to-head by itself as a tiebreaker. So that is not one. Number one, strength of schedule. That is the combined win-loss record for all 16 opponents that a team faces. Ties count as a half win and a half loss. The team with the lower strength of schedule, so the team with the worst competition, so that truly shows how bad you are if you have the same record but you played worse teams, right? That's how this works. So you want the lowest strength of schedule to win that tiebreaker to have the highest pick in the draft. Number two tiebreaker is the record in common games against division opponents if the teams are in the same division, which the Niners and Cards are. Third tiebreaker, record in common games against conference opponents if the teams are in the same conference, which obviously Niners and Cards are, not the Raiders. And number four would be coin flip, which occurs at the pre-draft NFL Combine. If you remember last year, the Niners and Raiders were tied record-wise, tied strength of schedule. Numbers two and three of the tiebreakers didn't come into play because they're not in the same division or same conference, so it came down to a coin flip. Niners won the coin flip. They picked nine. Raiders picked 10. This year, Raiders still tied to the Niners, but their strength of schedule is a lot higher, and I think it's enough higher to where the Raiders, if tied with either the Niners or Cardinals, will not have that tiebreaker over those two teams. But the Niners and Cardinals play very similar schedules, being in the NFC West. They only have a couple of games on their schedule different from each other. Right now, they're exactly tied with a 530 winning percentage for their opponents. The Raiders are at 566 right now. So the teams that you want to root for or against going the rest of the way, if you want the 49ers to try to win that strength of schedule, the San Francisco 49ers opponents that the Cardinals didn't play are the Giants and Tampa. So you want those teams to lose so the 49ers have a worse strength of schedule. The teams that Arizona plays, Atlanta and Washington, that the 49ers did not. Now, one of those games, three of those four games have happened already. Next week, Arizona plays Atlanta. So what happens in that game? Well, it's guaranteed to help the 49ers because either Atlanta wins and Arizona's strength of schedule goes up, or the Cardinals win and they're not tied record-wise anymore and the Cardinals win their fourth game. But right now, strength of schedule is tied. The New York Giants 5-8, Tampa 5-8. That's combined 10 wins between those two teams. Arizona's opponents, Atlanta 4-9, Washington 6-7, 10 wins combined between those two teams. Next week, that's going to change a little bit because it won't be tied anymore, or at least it won't be even. But, you know, all four of those teams, their wins and losses is really what's going to change this strength of schedule thing. So if that's tied at the end of the season, record in common games against division opponents. Now, the way that's worded, the first thing I thought of was, well, definitely Arizona is going to not be able to win that tiebreaker over the 49ers because Arizona beat the 49ers twice, and the 49ers haven't won any NFC West games. But now that I think about it, record in common games against division opponents. Well, the common games, the 49ers can't play themselves, and the Cardinals can't play themselves, so that can't be a common opponent, right? I don't know if those games can count. So the only games that would count would be their games against Seattle and the Rams, and neither the 49ers or the Cardinals have beaten the Seahawks or the Rams yet. A couple more on the schedules for the 49ers there. So that's still uncertain. I think it might be the 49ers, but not exactly sure on that one. Number three, record in common games against conference opponents. Two of the three 49ers wins are against AFC teams, the Raiders and the Broncos. The only NFC, the only conference opponent the 49ers have beaten is the Lions, who Arizona lost to this week. Niners lost to the Packers, the only other team aside from the 49ers, those aren't, if that's not a common opponent, right? The Packers is the other team that the Cardinals beat. So again, it would be tied. They each have one win against a conference common opponent. So if they lose out, that would be tied, and then it would go to tiebreaker number four, which is, as we saw last year with the Raiders, a coin flip. I'm sure that's as clear as mud to everybody, so if you have questions, still hit me up on Twitter at BDPeacock, email LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. That's going to do it for this episode of Locked On 49ers. Get those mailbag questions in, and I'll be back with the Weekly Wink tomorrow right here on Locked On 49ers.